Welcome to the Short Term Show, the show about short-term rentals and long-term wealth, with real property owners hosting real properties who are crushing it in the vacation and short-term rental space. And here's your host, Avery Carl.
Good morning out there, all you short-term shoppers. It's Avery Carl, and I wanted to give you guys a quick reminder about something that I don't think I've done a good enough job of keeping you aware of. So I get a lot of emails from y'all every week, and I love getting emails from you. By the way, I love talking to our listeners, and a lot of them are asking for real estate agent recommendations in different markets. And what I don't think I've done a good job of is making sure that you guys are aware that the Short Term Show is actually a subsidiary of the Short Term Shop, which is the largest short-term rental specific real estate team brokered by EXP. I have to say that or I get in trouble, in the country. So we have offices in 12 of the top short-term rental markets in the country, and we are here to help you purchase your first, second, third, or 10th short-term rental. And if you buy with us in any of those markets, we have a whole back-end training program where we will teach you everything you need to know about managing your short-term rental remotely. Everything from setting up your Airbnb and VRBO listings to teaching you how to use all the property management software that you'll need, all the way down to helping you source your local boots on the ground like cleaners and handymen. And we have some awesome Facebook support communities that we want you guys to be a part of, where we all share ideas and information about managing our short-term rental, which short-term rentals, which markets are the best, what we're doing next, and all of that really fun stuff. So if you want to be a part of the short-term shop community, if you want to buy a house with us, we really want to help you guys. So head on over to theshorttermshop.com and click schedule a consultation. We'll see you there. If you invest in real estate or manage properties, you need banking that's truly built for your business. Many traditional banks make it difficult to sync banking information across many of the personal finance platforms that we as real estate investors use every day. This is why I recommend Relay. Relay is an online banking and money management platform that's a perfect fit for any real estate business. First, there are no account fees, no overdraft fees, and no minimum balances, which means you get to keep more money in your pocket. Relay also goes above and beyond the banking basics to help you understand precisely what you're earning, spending, and saving. You get up to 20 checking accounts to organize and allocate income for things like day-to-day expenses, investments, or taxes. And if you have multiple investment properties set up as separate business entities, that's no problem. Relay lets you open unlimited accounts and access everything from one single login. Best of all, Relay makes your bookkeeping speedy and meticulous by giving you ultra-detailed transaction data and directly syncing it back to QuickBooks Online and Xero. The ability to have so many separate bank accounts and allocation options in my user dashboard has really transformed my personal banking experience. I will never go back. It takes 10 minutes to apply for a Relay account, and you can do it online at relayfi.com/theshorttermshop. So again, for more information and to open an account, go to relayfi.com/theshorttermshop. Good morning, short-term shoppers. Welcome back to the show. Today, we have a really exciting set of guests. I have been on their podcast before, and I'm very excited to have them here. We have Russ Morgan and Joey Murray from Wealth Without Wall Street. How's it going, guys?
We're doing great, Avery. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, great to finally be on the other side. We interviewed you a couple of years ago, and it's been awesome to see all the cool stuff you're doing. A lot of our listeners are listeners of yours as well.
Well, awesome. I'm really excited for our listeners, if they haven't heard your guys' show before, to hear what you guys have to say. So let's get going. You guys want to introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about yourselves in order, whoever wants to go first?
I always have to go first here, Avery, because ultimately, I basically made Russ who he is. You know, let's just be honest. Without me, we don't have Wealth Without Wall Street. We don't have a story to tell, because I was that guy who was on the hamster wheel of success, right? I was the guy that was climbing the corporate ladder and started to see lots of income. And I equated that with success. I equated that with financial freedom. But what the opposite actually happened is the more my income increased, the more I realized that my time was getting sucked away and I wasn't getting the time to spend with the people that matter the most, like my family. And I'll just, you know, you guys sell a lot of properties down in the Gulf Shores area. And I remember distinctly being at the beach down there in like Orange Beach, right next to Gulf Shores, and on vacation with the people I love, telling my daughters, and I have five daughters and my wife, telling them, go down to the beach. I'll be right behind you. I just have to take this one more call. And 2 hours later, I'm walking down to the beach and they're walking back on the boardwalk past me with disgusted looks on their face because I have missed being with them. Even though I was in proximity to them, I was not present with them. And so, man, financially, I needed to have financial freedom. I didn't need to have more income. And that's where it came in. I met Russ, we became friends. He started to unravel for me this book called Become Your Own Banker. And that book changed my life. And it started me on the trajectory to passive income. And now, you know, here we are, I guess it's been 8 or 9 years. I know it's been longer than that now, Russ. How long has it been?
See, he says that he is what made me, but without me, I mean, obviously he needed somebody to remind him that we started doing this in 2010 together. And since 2014, we've been partnered to find out new journeys. So it you're right. It's been 8 years. And we met Avery when I was actually just a typical certified financial planner. I was in the Wall Street world. I was helping people do, you know, retirement planning, life planning, financial planning, whatever you want to say. And it was grateful that he and I were learning together. The book I gave him, and it was something that I had just picked up. I just came back from a conference in 2009 where I was at after the market had crashed. Right now we're looking at the financial market seeming to be crashing at the same point. Well, they had crashed at that point. And so I was kind of hands to the sky looking for, what is the next opportunity? What is something that I really can get involved in that I don't feel like is, you know, just like standing on quicksand. And I got introduced to that concept of having our money in a place that we could access it. And then as time went on, it created this opportunity to say, well, where can I get passive income streams? And, you know, there's been a lot of fun over the last 5 years as Joey and I started getting into different activities and businesses. Short-term rentals is one of our big focuses as well. And we promote our passive income every month on our podcast to show the world the different businesses and ventures that we're in.
Awesome. So let's talk about your short-term rentals first, and then we'll get into everything else, of which there are a lot of things. So what do you have? What you got? Tell us about it.
So we have, we're in a really destination city, Avery. I know that you tend to work in the Smoky Mountains and the Gulf, Gulf area. But for us, like we're looking for a more highly trafficked area. So Birmingham, Alabama is where our short-term rentals are. Most of the people listening to this right now are like, yeah, absolutely. I've been there tons of times. I was planning my next destination trip there, you know, maybe if it was, you know, like a wedding or something like that.
I personally have been to Birmingham many, many times.
Most people have on their way to the beach as they drive right through. There's a couple of good gas stations to stop off at, get a Chick-fil-A or something. So we have 26 units and they're all either 1, 2, or 3 bedroom units. Most of them are apartments or condos or townhomes. We utilize the rental arbitrage model for almost every one of them. We got into doing this back in 2020, right after, you know, the pandemic was kind of like, you know, right at the height, you know, just came out of quarantine. And Joey had a townhouse that he had owned for like 12 years. And I was convincing him, man, we got to do the short-term rental thing. And the lease was ending in like May. And I was like, we can fix it up in June, furnish it out and have it up for rent in July, just see how it goes. And July of 2020, we put it on the market and we made I don't know, $3,200 in rent that month in short-term rental revenue. He had been renting it on a long-term basis at $950 a month. So it was kind of like, okay, this obviously is a strategy. And within a year, we were a little over 18. I think we had 18 units within 12 months. And we built out a whole model that's probably a little bit different than most, but we actually hired an operator from the very beginning and paid him a salary, built it out to where we could scale it as fast as possible. And our goal is to get to 50 by the end of 2022.
That is a lot of short-term rentals. So I think that's a really great strategy, is if you're going to have somebody manage it for you, that they're getting a salary and not a percentage of the income, because that typical model of 25%-ish of your gross income can add up really, really quickly and really put a damper on your ability to scale. So I like that. So you just ended up with Birmingham because, Joey, you owned a townhome there and then it went well and then you got more and got more. That's
To be honest, I was scared to death to start this whole thing because I was thinking, who in the world wants to come to Birmingham, Alabama, right? Like this can't, maybe this works other places. And we've heard similar questions from other people in other areas of the country who have taken our short-term rental course and they've inquired about it. They're like, well, how does this work? I don't know if it would work here. Bottom line is there was a lot more demand than you think. And we started finding that people come to places like Birmingham for all the things that you do in your normal life, right? Your kids are in travel ball. You're going to weddings. You're going to family like functions. It just happens to be that they're coming to Birmingham for different events and all these other things and stuff that maybe Russ and I don't even take part in within the city of Birmingham are still a big draw to people outside of the city. And once you realize it's a hospitality business, then one, you need to make sure you're a hospitable person and that you're okay with that sort of a business, but realize that there's a lot more people wanting to come to your area and they prefer to have a bigger unit than maybe say the little tiny hotel rooms. And by the way, in terms of the pandemic, a lot of people didn't want to go to hotels at all, or they were shut down completely. And so these were really some of the only places they could stay and felt safe staying. So we've been very surprised and pleasantly so, to the point where we're continuing to scale, as Russ mentioned, and looking for more opportunities to enhance even the experience that everybody's having when they come stay with us.
Yeah, you really are right about that. Because I grew up in Northeast Mississippi, and we always had soccer tournaments, baseball tournaments, or I played softball, all kinds of things there. And then even now, I live down in Santa Rosa Beach on 30A, which is like considered a luxury market. But if I want to go like to a Bloomingdale's or Saks or something, I either have to go to Birmingham or Atlanta. So, you know, I'm coming up to Birmingham myself because there's just not a lot of shopping down here. So people don't think about a lot of times that, yeah, oh yeah, I do have to go to this random little town. It's not always a destination. Birmingham, I guess, is not little. It's pretty good size, but you know what I mean.
It is, again, there's all different types, right? There's the beach rental, there's the lake rental, there's the mountain rental. And that's the stuff that, you know, we get really excited about and find opportunities. And Joey and I have been exploring those. And I think there's some opportunity there. But then also we found that there's opportunity in renting to someone who's just coming in town for a hospital visit, right? They have a family member, and Birmingham is known for their hospitals. And so we have a lot of guests, whether they be athletes or just your average person that's coming in town and needs a place. We've had, tornadoes. We're in Alabama, right? It seems like trailers and tornadoes are what we're known for. And we've had guests that have had to stay with us for upwards of 9 months. And, you know, they had insurance companies that were paying their bills. One of the coolest stories I think we have in our portfolio is that we were looking at getting some more units. We were in a complex. We get a call from the manager saying, hey, we've got three bedroom units coming available. Would you guys want them? The same day, a tornado came through and tore up probably 250, 300 homes in Birmingham. And I was seeing people on Facebook, like, I don't know where we're going to do. I don't know where we're going to stay. And so I told our operator, let's get them. We had them furnished within 2 weeks because thankfully we had already made some decisions before and had been stacking some furniture. And we put a couple in there in those two units and got $5,200 a month in those three bedroom units for almost a 9 month period of time. And our rent was like $1,450 a month. I mean, it was just like, we picked it up, immediately turned around, and it was like, that was easy. That was so amazing. And those opportunities are out there in all sorts of things, right?
Absolutely. And let's touch on the arbitrage thing for a minute, because we don't get many arbitragers on here. So I want to definitely hit that. So the number one question that I see surrounding arbitrage, like whether it's on Facebook or, you know, any forum, is how in the world do I get a landlord or a property manager or anyone to let me do this? So let's talk about that. Where are all of your units, like apartments, or are they houses? What's going on there? Let's start there and then get into the second question.
Yeah, I think we have three houses in our portfolio of 26, and the rest are either apartments, townhomes, condos. And it is, that's the most difficult thing in the arbitrage world, is to go and convince a property manager to rent you the apartment, knowing that you're going to then go out and put it on VRBO, Airbnb, booking.com, your own platform, whatever it may be. And that, you know, probably for every 10 that you go talk to, you have eight that tell you to kick rocks. And then the other two, you're really having to work through what that looks like. And we did that, and it was tough. But what we found is that once we got our foot in the door with one or two complexes, then we were able to show them what our product looks like. So if you go to wakeupinbirmingham.com, that's our direct channel right now. And you can see that we put together a really nice looking product for people. And so once we did that, and we brought the property manager in, we brought the leasing agents in, and they got to see what the unit looks like, they were like, this is awesome. And by the way, can we use this when you guys are not renting it to kind of like show new people that are looking to come into our complex? Because it was like the model home, if you will, for the complex. And it became a beautiful thing. You have to overcome the things that they think. They think there's going to be parties nonstop. They think it's going to be trash everywhere, that the tenants above and below are going to hate them, and it's going to be constant chaos. And we let them know, we answer those objections before they mention them. So we'll say, hey, Avery, you know, so we run a corporate rental operation, and we're looking to expand. We're looking for 4 to 5 units. We'll probably rent for the next 3 to 5 years from you. I want to come and look at your complex to see if you guys will be a good fit, and walk some units with you. So we're walking around, we'll say, you know, the key for us is making sure that we have a really nice quiet area, because our tenants who come are usually coming in town for things like hospital visits. They're coming on business and they don't want a lot of noise. Do you guys have a lot of noise in your complexes? If that's it, we're not really interested in that. So we're bringing up the things to them that normally they would be wanting to ask us. And we say, you know, also one of the things that we do to ensure that our guest experience enhances all the tenants around us is that we offer in our units, we put a noise aware system in there. Are you familiar with that? No. Our noise aware system is something that reads the decibel volume on a given time frame, and we have it set for daytime and nighttime hours. So in the event that we did have a noise issue, we actually will know about it before anybody else will, and we'll contact our tenant. In the over 5,000 nights that we've had 3 issues, and we had to get one of the people out, and it took us about 90 seconds to remove them from the operation. Have you guys ever had to evict somebody out of your apartment complex? And how long did it take when that was the case, right? And they're like, oh, well, it took us forever. It was 6 months. We're like, yeah, it takes us about 90 seconds. They're like, well, how's that possible? Well, we set the alarm off, and they go running out the door, and then we change the lock digitally, and they're gone. And unfortunately, that happened, you know, in one situation we had to do that. But over 5,000 nights has been amazing. And we're looking really for people that are a specific type. And so we start setting the expectation of what we look for and how it works. And that then starts to lower the fears of those people. And then the other second situation. You have a lot of real estate investors, I'm assuming, that listen to your show. They have relationships with people who own multifamily. And I think that was one of the biggest things that Joey was able to add value to our company, is that he went and called on one of those relationships, somebody he knew that owned over 1,000 units in Birmingham. And we got a lunch with them, and we sat down and we were telling them about our business plan and said, hey, do you have a complex where we could take over 5 or 10 units that would be a good fit? And he said, well, actually, I got a building around the corner and it's 12 units. I already have 4 rented, but I could probably rent you guys out the other 8. And so we were able to pick up 8 right off the bat. And now we're looking at doing a 20 unit deal with him, because he's like, you guys pay on time. You have the cleanest, you know, space ever. I never get any complaints from any of the tenants around you guys because of the ways that you handle your operation. How many more do you want?
I think the big thing there, Avery, is if you're just trying to break into this business, the hardest one is the first one. But the second thing that I'll take away from what Russ mentioned is, if you have to be prepared to think like that operator of that building, what is he thinking, or he or she thinking, and go ahead and like bring those things up ahead of time and treat it as if you're a business already, even if you're not completely operating as one today. And that's where I would say education is going to help you be prepared. We spent probably $25,000 in coaching to make sure that our operator was up to snuff on making sure all those objections were going to be very easily put to bed. So I would say you have to invest in educating yourself in order to operate as if you're a business. If you're just kind of playing around with it, it's going to be really difficult to convince that first person to give you a shot.
Fake it till you make it, just like everything.
That's right.
Okay, awesome. So now I want to talk about, because that's a really, really interesting business model that you guys have. And I don't think anybody who's been on the show yet has really done it that way. Like, you're arbitraging, yet you also have like a manager that you're using. So you've got several layers there, but you're still able to cash flow, which is a pretty difficult thing to accomplish. So that's pretty crazy that you've been able to accomplish that.
Well, and the reason that we approach it that way, Avery, is just, it really goes back to the way we think, is we are 100% focused on financial freedom, being passive income greater than monthly expenses. And so for Russ and I, we love the idea of short-term rentals and arbitrage, but we knew we weren't the guys, like, we didn't want to create a new job for ourselves. And so it really made us get creative to the point where we were like, we have to hire somebody. It has to be this sort of person, because we have to be hands-off. It has to kind of run in the background. And I'm grateful we did that, because it's one of the things we report on every month, and it's averaging about $20,000+ a month net after all expenses paid every single month. And it's one of our biggest strategies, but it's one of the least amount of time that we ever have to put into it. We meet with our operator once every couple weeks, and we do some brainstorming like once or twice a year. And beyond that, it runs itself.
Well, would you be interested in knowing the specific numbers for April? I'm sure. Sitting here, our operator actually just sent us over a report to you know, show us, because we get that usually between the 10th and the 15th every month. So we did 94,000 in revenue on those units last month, and our net profit was $30,430 after paying all expenses, all rents, salaries to our operator and everything. So that was what we netted at the end of the day.
And how many units is that again?
That is 26.
26 units, 97,000 gross, 30 net, you said, after everything?
Yeah, 94 gross, 30 net. And again, these are not, I mean, you know, I know that like for our clients that are working with you and your short-term rental stuff that are up in the Smokies and down on the Gulf Coast, right? Those numbers are really like penny ante, right? Because we're working with like one bedrooms, two bedroom condos where people are coming into Birmingham and not spending $1,000 a night to stay in a place up in Gatlinburg or down in, you know, Panama City or whatever. So for us, this is, you know, it's one of those things where what is our outlay? Our outlay is $950 a month or $1,450 a month for the rent, plus what we've obviously put in furnishings. And then, you know, now we're looking to get somewhere between $3,000 to $5,000 a month and revenue for each one of those units so that we cash flow $1,500 to $2,500 a piece. So somewhere average around $800 to $900 a bedroom.
That's awesome. And what I want the listeners to really take away from this conversation, because like I just posted a video, or actually Bigger Pockets posted a video that I made that got really nice comments on their YouTube. And then when I reposted it in my own goddamn Facebook group, I got ripped apart. But so I said that I'm into investing in condos lately for short terms, because there can be opportunity there, because so many investors are like, no, I'm scared of condos, I don't want to do that. And then I listed off all the reasons why there's opportunity there. And especially in vacation markets, like there's not really anybody living in primary homes in these condos. The whole building was developed specifically to be short-term rentals. So it makes sense to do that. But what I want everybody to take away from this is there are 1,000 ways to be successful in real estate and even in short-term rental real estate. So a small niche of real estate investing. You guys are doing things 100% different than what I do. Our two business models could not be more different, yet we are both successful and we're both making money. So there's no right or wrong way to do anything. If you're, you know, you just have to find success the way that you find it. And I think that you guys are a really good example of that.
Yeah, I totally agree. One thing I'll point out is one of the things that we've done in our community is people just get interested in different types of investments and they think, oh, well, it's short-term rental, so I just need to do what Avery Carl's doing, right? I just need to do what Russ and Joey are doing. And we actually kind of balk at that and say, actually back up a second and figure out what sort of investor you are, right? And most people don't know where to start. They don't know, who am I as an investor? And to be honest, Robert Kiyosaki says that there's really no good or bad investments, only good or bad investors. And so we have an investor DNA profile that we put people through that helps them to determine, well, what are the pros of short-term rentals as I would see them? And what are the cons of short-term rentals as I would see them? Not the way Avery and Joey and Russ see them, but the way I see them. And that will help them to deter from maybe getting involved with something that's not really aligned with themselves. And they're going to have limited success if they go down that path just because they think, oh, well, somebody else has had success. They need to focus in on who they are. And so to your point, you know, it's not necessarily one way or the highway. It's literally finding out who you are and how to apply that to the various investments that are available.
I totally agree with that. And I think really the main thing is you do just have to identify with yourself, okay, what's going to work best for me, and not go, because another mistake that I see investors make is trying to mix up too many strategies, like, you know, maybe trying to come down here to Destin and do the arbitrage thing. Well, that's not going to work because it's not done here. There's plenty of short-term rental property managers that you could make the same money if you just put it on with them than trying to arbitrage. Nobody's going to let you do that, because why would they not just put it with a manager? Same thing, you know, like just trying to mix up too many investment strategies into one thing. So you do have to like say, okay, this is what's most important to me, and this is the route I'm going to go. And I actually was having an interesting conversation with some investors earlier this week too, that even the difference between what metric you find to be most important when you're investing can be different, and it can sound wrong to some people when it works for you. So for example, the conversation I was having is we were talking about cash on cash return, and they were like, well, I don't care if it's, we were talking about 20% in short term kind of being the benchmark. And they're like, well, I don't care if it's 17%, as long as the cash flow monthly is what I want it to be. Because right now, with the way interest rates are and the way loans are, a lot of times there's mandatory points on any conventional loan. So those points cut into what your cash on cash return would be. But, and it's like for me now too, I don't care if I have to pay a couple points and that cuts down my cash on cash return a little bit. If I'm making $10,000 a month, that was an arbitrary number, by the way, don't quote me, then I kind of don't care.
Like, as long as the cash flow per month is what I need it to be, I kind of don't care what I put into it up front. But that's a completely different mindset than what I had when I first started, because I didn't have the extra capital to be able to not care what I put in up front. So I was really focused on that cash on cash return. So you can become a different investor over time, and other people's ways of doing things don't necessarily have to be wrong, just like yours doesn't have to be wrong to them. There's just, I just spent 30 minutes of this entire show explaining that there's no wrong way to do this. So,
I get it.
Yeah. Anyway, so let's change gears a little bit, because you guys are pretty experienced in something that confuses me to death. I do not have this type of brain, so it has to be explained to me 100 times. And I am sure there are lots of other listeners of the show that might have the same type of brain that I do. Talk to me about infinite banking.
What a great topic. This is something that it is, as Joey said a second ago, that book, Becoming Your Own Banker, is kind of where our paths initially crossed from a professional standpoint. Infinite banking is the process of using your capital to finance the purchases, investments that you make, instead of going through a traditional banking model. Now, most people don't start there, right? They don't have millions of dollars to go buy properties on the coast or in the mountains or wherever it may be and not have to use a traditional mortgage. So it may be that they're starting with the amount of money on a monthly basis, slowly growing that capital. The process is typically using a dividend paying whole life insurance policy, not the one set up, you know, by your typical Northwestern or State Farm agent, right? That was built for the highest death benefit, so that if you die, your family is better off, you know, or able to be able to, you know, make do when you're not there. It's built as a place to store cash instead of a checking account. So for us as investors, we have lots of cash flows, right? I just mentioned one of, you know, six different businesses Joey and I operate out of, that we bring in, you know, $10,000 to $30,000 a month in passive income. And that money has to reside somewhere. And until you have a place to put, you know, to reinvest it, where does it normally sit? It sits in a checking account earning a zero. We know that. We like it because it's liquid, but we hate all the fact that, you know, somebody, if they were to sue us, could come steal it tomorrow, and that it's losing purchasing power as everything else is going up in cost daily, right? So we use these insurance contracts as a place to store our cash, get a small but still guaranteed rate of return on it, avoiding the tax on that growth, avoiding access to creditors from that, and while at the same time getting some of those other perks that normally we buy insurance for anyway, like death benefit. So we've been building a system around everything that we do for the last 12 years, to where now we have built a place where when we do investment opportunities, like, so, you know, obviously every one of those apartment complexes that we go in, we'll spend somewhere around $15 a square foot to furnish it. And so that may be a, you know, $15,000 bill, maybe a $25,000 bill. And so we go and borrow against our life insurance contracts, put that $25,000 in to be able to buy the furniture, and then take that $1,500 to $3,000 a month cash flow that comes back, and we use it as a loan repayment back to those insurance policies. And we just continue to operate like that process over and over and over again.
What, and the so what behind it, Avery, is I'm going to use my example, and I'm also going to use a couple of the guys that you've been able to help from our community to build, like, as they told me the other day, you've changed their lives. Okay. This is why infinite banking is so important. Before infinite banking, I put money into 401ks, IRAs, college savings plans, HSAs, fill in the blank with as many acronyms as you can come up with. And all of those things were technically my money, but I didn't view them as my money. And let me give you an example. If you would have come to me, Avery, and talked about all these short-term rental opportunities, and at that time in my life, I would have said, that sounds like a really good opportunity for someone who has access to money. I don't have any money. In the meantime, I had multi-hundreds of thousands of dollars sitting in my 401k. Now, there's something wrong with that. And if you're listening to this and you think, hey, wait a minute, I didn't think 401ks and IRAs were for money for like investing, then you're in the same mindset that I was. You're like, that's for quote unquote retirement. Well, what happens when you start putting money into these insurance contracts the way Russ lined out, you start putting a large amount of money into a place where you can access your, something clicks within your brain and you say, I need to do something with this money. I have access to cash. It's sitting here. I need to, as somebody in our show told us one time, he said, I had to tell it what to do. I had to start telling my money what to do. And so it made me be educated. And so we have people in our community that did this process. They started putting large amounts of money into these cash flowing policies, as Russ mentioned. And then they heard you on our show and they said, wait a minute, that sounds really good. I think I'm that sort of investor that loves the hospitality business. And they bought a cabin, just one cabin in the mountains. And in a short amount of time, they created over $6,000 a month in cash flow to themselves that created security and more financial freedom. And then were able to leverage that into just a short amount of time. And within a couple years, into almost $500,000 windfall that they were then able to disperse into multiple assets and create even more cash flow per month. Now, compare that with the traditional mindset of just putting money in my 401k and hoping for the best. These are people that are having freedom today with the money they have access to today versus, well, I hope in 30 years when I hang up the cleats and I'm no longer working in my 9-to-5 that I have enough money just to pay the bills. Those are the differences in the way we think, the way you think. And if you're listening to this and you're saying, I want something different, infinite banking is just the first step to where you start putting that capital to work into things like short-term rentals or any number of other passive income ideas that take place.
That was very, very well worded. I feel like that was a total mic dropper and we should just end the show right now.
Well, just to be clear, was it what I said or what Russ said? Because I always tell Russ I'm much better than him. And he just, I don't know if he agrees
with you. You guys are both equal. Y'all are equal. but that was really good. So I think that y'all both did a really good job of explaining the infinite banking idea. And I think that's definitely something that I personally need to look into. It's one of those things that is on my list of things I need to do that just never gets done. It's that. And then also, my front porch is the tile on there is really slippery and my mom has slipped out on it twice. And I keep meaning to get that spray to like make it kind of grainy so you don't slip down. So it's infinite banking and making my porch less slick. But I do have the Ring videos of my mom falling both times and it was hilarious. So.
Well, you can't get rid of those. You at least have that video gold to hold on to.
Yeah, but I need to, so I definitely need to get both of those things done. Maybe I need to do the infinite banking thing first. So I could put some, that was a question I had. So assuming someone slips and falls on my front porch and they come for me, is the money that you have in a whole life insurance policy, can someone access that with like a lawsuit, or you said creditor, but my question was lawsuit.
Well, since Joey and I are not attorneys, we'll try not to give legal advice there, right? That was a very opportunity for that. Here's what I know is there. You're down in Florida. You said there was another famous guy that lived down in Florida, ultimately became probably infamous, and some people may know the name O.J. Simpson. O.J. Simpson obviously had a lot of things going against him. And one of the things is that he had a big civil lawsuit from the families that he lost and was having to pay them any monies that he was making. But people were like, well, but didn't O.J. Simpson live in a gated community down in Florida somewhere? How is he a member of a country club? How is he doing all that if supposedly he was bankrupt from all of this? Well, the NFL pension plan is a life insurance annuity. And that protection given to life insurance, even in an annuity, is protected from creditors. So I give the worst example that you can think of like that to say that, can someone come and get it? I have been told, obviously, every state has their own provision, so you need to look at your state and specifically. So in the state of Alabama, if someone were to fall on our properties, get hit by a car that we were driving, none of the monies, the more than seven figures that Joey and I individually have in our own insurance contracts, none of that is subject to that those lawsuits. It is, in essence, off the books. It's blind to those creditors. So I love the fact that, you know, one, this gives us an opportunity to stack cash. I love the fact that I can grow that money in there and never have to pay a dollar in tax on it. And I also love the fact that as we build many different businesses that create liabilities for us, that those dollars are not subject to a creditor being able to steal it from us. Now, again, I would say check your state, because every state has a little bit different rules as it relates to life insurance. So I won't give you advice on your state, but I know in the state of Alabama, my attorneys have shown me that it is 100% creditor proof.
Cool. So if I get off on a criminal charge, that I can probably maybe still afford a life of luxury when I get hit with a civil suit for the same thing, if all of it is in that type of asset. Got it.
Yeah. Basically what Russ said is just be like OJ.
I did not say that, but she's in Florida. I had to, you know, again, give the most dramatic example, right?
Nobody's going to remember anything else from this show except I need to be like OJ Simpson. I don't know.
Okay. Well, so lots and lots of great information on this episode. I think people are going to be rewinding and listening again. You guys have dropped a lot of nuggets of information. So now we are to the last three questions of our show, three for each of you. And the first is, what advice do you have for 20-year-old Russ and Joey?
Well, I would say the first thing that I didn't do, right, is that I didn't read the book Cashflow Quadrant, so I had no idea that I was operating in an employee mindset and I was trading time for money. I was, you know, as I worked my way up that corporate ladder, making more and more money, I was going to be, you know, paying some of the highest amount in taxes that you could pay. And so if I could go back, I would have given, you know, 20-year-old Russ the advice I was sharing with my 16-year-old daughter the other day, teaching her, drawing out the cash flow quadrant, talking about how each one of those people make money, how each one of those people pay taxes, and visualizing for her which one of those cash flow quadrants do you think you really want to be on. So that's what I would do.
And I'll say, Avery, I've got five daughters. My oldest is 16, just as Russ's daughter is. And I would say that it's a few years ahead of schedule on the 20-year conversation. But the things that I'm going over with them now is very much like, hey, the value of a college education is dramatically reduced compared to when we were going through school, you know, almost 20 years ago. And the reason I say that is because the things I've learned over the last 20 years have to do with being empowered, that there are so many ways to make money and to do so passively, that if you can learn how to do that and not learn how to trade time for money, then you win, right? Because the people that we help are typically like Russ and I were 12 years ago. They are stuck in this trap of trading time for money over and over and over, and sometimes at a high rate, right? Even if you're an attorney or you're a doctor, you're just trading time at a much higher rate than somebody that's working at Chick-fil-A. But you're literally doing the same process. Instead, think about what is the one thing I can do and be a niche expert in potentially that I could create that someone else can run, right? That is the freedom that I'm trying to build for my daughters. And so one of them is actually starting a land business that will, she's hired virtual assistants to help her with various tasks within the business where she can take raw land and flip it for 300 to 1,000% profits and turn it into monthly notes back to herself, where she can then focus on what she really loves, which is art, and you know, potentially having a family one day. So anyways, that's just what I would say, is just think about stopping trading time for money.
Both great answers. Next question. What advice do you have for a new investor who's getting started right now at this point in time in the market cycle?
I would say I'm going to just kind of unfortunately do like a callback to what I said earlier. Before you do the first thing, figure out what sort of investor you are, right? Take into consideration your personality profile as it relates to the various things that are available. And we actually, again, I can call you into our community. We have a community where you can take that profile. It's wealthwithoutwallstreet.com/passport. If you go there first, it will walk you through how to get access to that profile if you want access to it. If not ours, take it somewhere and make sure you know what that is before you get started.
Yeah, I would say, obviously, that I repeat that to a 20-year-old because I was at the lake last summer with one of my nephews, and he was 20 years old, and he was asking me, he had actually just made $20,000 from TikTok. He created videos, and they were paying basically TikTok influencers money in order to create these viral videos, and he had one that had like 800,000 views on it. It was something really stupid, as most TikTok videos I think are. And he had $20,000. He's like, Uncle Russ, what should I do? And I told him exactly that thing. Go take this assessment, find out what your investor DNA profile is, and then let's have a conversation. So once he did that, then I was able to walk through and say, you see the world this way. Here's the pros and cons. The second part to that, so without just, you know, copying Joey's answer, I think I said it probably better than he did, is to find a mentor then in that space. Once you figure out who you are as an investor and you find the things that align with that profile that you've been able to create, is go find a mentor in that space. Go find someone, like if I wanted to be in the short-term rental space, I would be knocking on your door. I would be figuring out how in the world could I come and help you in your business, help you on your podcast. I would be trading free time, not for money. I'd be trading time for free, because to me, the best thing I could do is learn from an expert, invest time. Kids, 20-year-olds are going to college and paying to go learn from people how to do a specific thing. But to be honest, those people are in college. They're college professors for a reason. They didn't make it in the real world, right? And I'm not knocking if you're a college professor, but I'm just saying, right? Those who can't do, they teach. So I would go and figure out the people who are doing. I'd go figure out, you know, if there's a professor that is doing as well, I want to go, that's the person I'm going to cozy up to. I'm going to go find a mentor that's in that space that can teach me the things that they have experienced so I can borrow the information instead of how to pay retail for it.
Both very good answers again. And I kind of think I might know the answer to at least one of y'all's on this next one, but what is your favorite book that has impacted your mindset?
Well, I'm going to tell you the favorite book for me that influenced me well before I ever read the book Becoming Your Own Banker, which is what influenced Joey's life because I gave it to him, is the book E-Myth Revisited by Michael Gerber. And that book helped me understand that the difference between being an entrepreneur and being just a self-employed, someone trading time for money, being that solo dependent, economically dependent on my labor, helping me think through a process of building business. Because if you look at all the things that Joey and I do, we build businesses. And to me, the reason that has helped that growth is always starting with a plan of how to get ourselves out of all of those individual roles within those businesses and have other people do it. And that book is what influenced me to be able to have that mindset.
Don't be the pie lady. I'm still lady in a lot of ways.
And Russ did steal my thunder as he's accustomed to doing. But yeah, I would never have broken out of the hamster wheel if I had not read Become Your Own Banker. It totally changed the trajectory of my life. I was making over $300,000 in the mortgage business at 29 years old, thinking, man, this is so good. And then realizing, but something is just not right. Like this is not where I thought what success would look like. And so for me, it changed everything about the future.
both very, very good answers. Well, guys, thank you so, so much for coming on. And if our listeners want to find out more about what y'all do, where can they find you?
I'll point back to that link that I just gave, if that's okay, wealthwithoutwallstreet.com/passport. It's our app, it's our community, which I know, Avery, you've been in there, and it's a place where over 5,500 people are joined together on the same journey to financial freedom. You're supported by all those people, but you're also exposed to opportunities and like-minded people, because the biggest thing holding you back from financial freedom, first of all, is access to cash. And secondly, your community, the people around you, are not on the same path. So what do you think they're doing? They're not encouraging you towards financial freedom. In many cases, they're like crabs in a barrel pulling you back down. When you hear this awesome podcast and you go back to that same group of people and they're like, yeah, but you know, those short-term rentals, that's for people that they're not like you. They don't work in this 9-to-5 with us. Like, they start to make you doubt. They start to make you kind of pull back from that excitement and momentum that you may have been building. And so being around people like you who are trying to get there will only enhance your journey. So, and that's where Russ and I hang out the most. So you can DM us in the app and we'd love to communicate with you then.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys again so much for coming, and we'll catch you later.
Thank you for having us.